Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thanks for coming. I appreciate you showing up. How have you been? Hope you've been well. It's been a transition into the fall season here in my native state of Colorado. Colorful Colorado. So warm to so cold so quick. I don't know if anybody can relate. Maybe some of my listeners are from Colorado, but I know that a lot of you are from out of my home country as well. A lot of the listeners for the Gingerbread Man exist in countries such as India, which is a cultural hearth of information and knowledge that I have started tentatively to delve into. I'm a layman and I'm a novice, but I have a true respect for Indian culture, truthfully. I also have a lot of listeners from the UK and other parts of Europe, and then a lot of listeners from within the United States and other cities. So I'd like to take this moment to tell you all, thank you. I deeply appreciate you listening. I never figured when I started this project that anyone who didn't know me would know about it. But surprisingly, it has grown. And as usual in my show, I'd like to state my purpose here. And then maybe we could talk about what a purpose is more. I see my place in reality as a sort of pusher, maybe a challenger. I've used the word polemicist in the past, with polemicism being the master of the counterargument. So I've also used the word on the show before called a sophist. So I think there's a very thin line between what a sophist is and a polemicist. A sophist is like a debater, like a master debater. And what in old schools of Greece would happen is people would sell their ability to argue. And so they would teach people how to recognize the opposite of a counter-argument and basically taught people the negation of the truth, like on the far end of the extreme, that is. So an extreme sophist would be like almost like a skeptic, where they're using all the counter-arguments against things to prove that nothing exists, which perhaps might be the case, you know, and I'm not going to argue against that either. That's a possibility that nothing exists. However, I once heard a well-known polemicist to me describe what a polemicist was, and he said that when he's challenging somebody's belief systems, you know, the counter-argument comes in as a productive force, and once you counter somebody from a place of compassion, you know, but it still is an act against on the face of their belief, that is. Yet, the outcome is a positive act because, A, if my counterargument is refuted, then the other has their belief reinforced, and that's a good thing, right? And if the counter destroys their belief or shines light into a hole, you know, and then together we could come and try to find the true belief. So the goal of polemicism would be the seeking of the truth, you see. So I see myself as a kind of pusher of people and ideas. And I have a young guy that I'm working with at my kitchen now. We'll call him Kay. And I'm just getting to know the kid, but he's 20, and so he's young, and I'm realizing his youth. And our first day working together, we got into a little debacle, and it was hilarious because he has a very material science minded headset. And so right now he's exactly where I was when I was 20. You know, he adores science and he has firm convictions in the things he's been told and belief. But I started to challenge some of his ideas, and not that I'm anti-science anymore. Roughly 2 or 3 years ago, I did take a brief stint where I did want to refute science, and it was more of a more of me reinforcing my counter against everything, because I was atheist. I was anti-science. I was just trying to refute everything in some way to find my independence, you know? But this kid's he's a little bit before that. So he's fresh out of school and he has all of his publicly gained knowledge from empirical sources. And he's very proud of them and happy of them. And I can play with those things too. And it's not like I don't listen to science neither. I always have a book of science going and I still read as much of the stuff that interests me. You know, I love science fiction and I love space travel and AI and all these things heavily interest me. So, you know, and of course I am very consumed with the biology of life and consciousness and the connections between subjective sensation and our being, our isness, you know. And I've also been obsessed with messing with and interfering with these traditional systems through the actions of psychedelics. And most conversations based around psychedelics come from an empirical source. You begin talking about neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine, you know. But even then, when scientists are looking into the brain, I have heard the analogy put forth that looking into the brain is like poking a telescope up into the sky and looking at all the solar systems and galaxies. And when you look up into the sky with this seeking device, you see an immense multitude of lights with possible beings and other things orbiting around them. Yet, when you look into but you can't identify all those pieces, you know, that's what I'm saying. And when you look into the brain, you know, you might see a lot of lights and shiny bits, but there's so much going on that we don't understand and we can't identify every single little piece. Whereas material world science is about reducing things to pieces. You know, the way we describe anything is by describing its parts. And so, when you're looking at the holistic model of consciousness, you can't look at the parts to understand why we feel the way we do. So I've even found conflict within myself discussing some of the sciencey things that I haven't been encouraged by people who've been looking into psychedelic science, which is a thing now. You know, active investigators are doing more research than ever before into why they do what they do. But I feel like we're in the Stone Ages, and when it comes to understanding life and being and the connections between the material brain and our vessel and whatever specialness is who we are, you know, I think a lot of that is highly up in the air, and that's why I'm looking. But my action of looking, I want it to be contagious. I want to pass along this fire, the spark inside me that pushes me to want to keep going. And I want each and every one of you and anyone who can to be just as curious for what they are curious in. And that may not be what I'm curious in. It may have nothing to do with what your neighbor or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your children are interested in. It might be unique to you, but meaning in life comes from looking at this subjective seat that we are in. And then finding our place in the net, in Indra's net of interdispersed orbs reflecting each other back a bajillion. So to the point that you could never entangle or disentangle where the actual separate orb is. You see, it takes some sort of individual journey gained with finding our place in what is outside ourself. And part of that comes with love. And I know you might be sick about hearing about it, but I see love as a mystical being almost. I think that love and compassion are our default networks in our I say it's like a default program in a computer, you know, but you can't do much on the default program, so you have to run all kinds of operating software, you know. And so once you start uploading programs, you start to get viruses, and those viruses, I'd say, were analogical to delusions about ourself or our place within humanity. One of the biggest things that gets in between people being able to love each other with compassion is a judgment based upon the character of another. I would call this delusion, you know? We create systems of considerations within inside our own mental world. And inside our own mental world, we have models and duplicates of the actual world. Because that's how we move from place to place, is by having a model within to be able to figure. When that model within begins to break down, we have a hard time moving. This happens when people have been over inebriated on alcohol or any large amount of substance. When our vehicle gets muggy and our connections with it, when we can't hold on to the steering wheel of the car any longer, you know, then it becomes hard to move through the physical world. And at the point where I'm trying to get here is that's because the model of the physical world that's inside has been disturbed or has been messed with. So I think what we're trying to do is build an accurate model where we don't put enemies into it, because we can also manifest things from the inside to the out. So we encounter something we have disagreement with, or we think we have disagreement with. Picture yourself in a road rage situation where you're driving on a road and all of a sudden a stranger may cut you off. In the physical world, there was an actual car. You saw the car. You're driving. So you have these complex systems between your inner psyche and the outer that keep you in the car in tandem with hundreds of other people doing the exact same thing, which I consistently find to be amazing. Yet, the stranger has done something that you have judged as aggressive and could hurt people. And that's not the question, is whether or not it's right or wrong, but it's how you feel about it and what your reactions are going to be from there based upon past reactions. So, in your inner model, you see a monster. You start building a monster for the stranger, even though this person might not have even saw you. They might have just been stupid or ignorant. So, now, based upon this monster that you built in your head of the stranger, based upon a real-world action, you see how much flipping-flopping comes from in to out to in to out to in to out. And now, your body rhythms are reacting to this monster, because when you have an aggressive act put to you that's trying to hurt you, you know, you want to defend yourself. You want to protect yourself. A lot of people's actions to defend themselves are to fight fire with fire. So now you have begun to drive erratically. And now you weave in and out of traffic, keeping your eyes peeled for that license plate, those numbers that are now the quintessential essence of everything you disagree with in the world because of the monster that's living inside your own psyche that you've created based upon this real world person. And now you cut somebody else off, and it's like a chain reaction of delusion where people start passing along aggressive figments. When, if you cut somebody off, do you feel like a monster? Do you think the person who cut you off feels like a monster? So this is systemic in how mass society interacts with itself, I think. With this focus on individual rights and individual being and me, which is important, but with a complete denial of all of the interconnections that are in between the little and the outer. So I think the gravitational force that holds things together, and we humans have kept it within society because our societies hold us together by specialization and a need for others to create things that we want. Yet, even outside of human society, I think you can see a gravitational tug that keeps things together. And I see this in ecological situations where you have different forests and different, like even deserts, where you have life chains, food chains, where things feed upon each other. And it may start with the sun or with minerals and dirt or decomposition or chemical combustion, geothermal heat, you know, all these starting sources that set the momentum going, but things stay together and work together to maintain the system, even if individual bits are being eaten and dying. As a whole, the forest system will survive even if the fox eats the pigeon. It may be sad for the pigeon. The pigeon might have had an opinion about it. But the forest lives. And even if the pigeon didn't want to sacrifice itself, there tends to be this momentum that keeps things together as long as something dramatically different comes from the outside. Like an asteroid impact that killed the dinosaurs. You know, there are colossal disasters and natural occurrences that happen on this world that seem to naturally check any concurrent thing, which is something I'm still questioning. But anyways, I digress. Within the systems of these forests or deserts or oceans or coral reefs, you know, there's this glue that keeps things together, and the animals stay doing what they do, and we humans tend to find our groove, and it might be more complicated, but we do seem to do what we do for some sustained amount of time, and not a lot of us completely isolate ourselves. And this tug together is what I call love. That love is what I want people to be able to lean on, because when we're feeling that anger and the ferocity towards others, even behind supreme anger, we can still love another, even if it's our enemy. And once we can see past the negative inner models we build for other people in situations, we can often put ourselves in those situations. Once we are in the shoes and seeing through the eyes of an empathic link, we have so much more ability to actually influence the situation, because then we are working with love and we're not working from our own idolized delusions. This compassion and this drive towards togetherness is easier than fighting. Yet, I feel that human society has built into us more and more desires and more wants to protect these images inside our own psyche that no one can ever see but us, and our tools but merely reflections of what we are part of. So I guess that was a really long introduction for this show that became the show, an extended edition. So purpose, what is your purpose? You know, you may not want to think too deeply and philosophize about small details like I, but in your world, do you have an ability to affect others? Do you love others? Do you have a family? Are you young? Are you old? If you're old, does your family still take care of you? Do you have connections with the people in your community, even if you are in some sort of retirement community? If you are young, are you over-immersed in your peer groups? Are you over-immersed in the outside knowledges? Have you thought enough critically or constructively about what your belief systems are based upon that? Because this world doesn't teach about the inner models. At least, I was never told that I had a fictionary world in my head that I was playing out of. You know, people talk about the imagination, but I think as we age, I think we naturally come to this conclusion, you know? But we can't just make ourselves a reflection of the outer. We have to be an active part of it. We have to be a composition with it. We have to influence each other. We make music together. We are walking each other home. So I'd like you really to think about your purpose this week. I'd like you, if you are inclined, you can email me your purpose. My email is thegingerbreadmansdialogues@gmail.com. You could just email a short bit of what you think your purpose is, and maybe we could work together to figure out how to increase your connectiveness. I hope that your week treats you well. After I get off this, me and my son are going to be taking a long drive up to northern Colorado, and we're going to go see his family. So wish us well. I'll be back soon. I know I haven't been every week, but I should go back to every week at some point. But doing twice a week has made it easier to compile my thoughts. You know, it's like farming. If you take all the berries off the plant, you can't eat. And so I've had to let some things grow. And so I appreciate your patience, and I appreciate you continuing to come back here to spend this time with me. I'm grateful that you're breathing. I'm grateful that you woke this morning. I'm grateful that I have this opportunity to be here. So, with love, your friend, the Gingerbread Man.